It's time for the Week in Review, and we will start our weekly roundup of the top issues in the news this week with a review of last night's vice presidential debate. What stood out to you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us today, Chris Lotto, who is former communications director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, good morning, Joy.
And also joining us, Joe Winicky, former state senator, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Chris.
Well, let's get Joe first. It was hoped by the Obama campaign that Vice President Joe Biden would stop the momentum of the Romney campaign since last week's presidential debate. Did Vice President Biden do that?
Oh, sure. He succeeded wonderfully in that. Vice President Biden did was excite the Democratic base last night. Now, saying that, this whole notion that all of this momentum or whatever it has been in the last week is largely a creation of the media who want a horse race. And, you know, from my perspective, until I can see some survey that says that Ohio is in the Romney camp, I would say, so what?
All right. Well, Chris, what do you think about, did Biden win that debate last night?
No. I think that, you know, I sat and watched and took notes throughout the entire debate last night, and I was struck for a very large portion of the debate, and there's been a lot of comment about this, about Joe Biden's performance. I think by and large, it was a draw in terms of substance. I think each guy got some body blows on the other. So I didn't see anything particularly where I said, whoa, that was really bad. You know, Joe Biden, the gaffe machine, was not necessarily out last night. But his performance was something else. I mean, we all know now that Joe Biden has an awesome set of teeth because we saw him every 10 seconds last night. He was really off-putting, very aggressive, constantly attacking and trying to, you know, go after Paul Ryan. It was really kind of a surprising and off-putting performance. Now, I think Joe alluded to this earlier, and I think he's right. I think Joe Biden appealed to the base last night. Problem is the base isn't who they have to go after. It's independents. And I really wonder how independents were going to respond to that kind of performance last night.
And I'll respectfully disagree with Chris on that. I think this nation and this state as well is so polarized that this is going to be largely a base election. There are few undecided voters out there. So the key is to get your base, whether it be Democrat or Republican, to the polls. And I think that Vice President Biden did, you know, exemplary in that area. And the other thing is, I actually thought it was a good debate. I mean, I thought that the moderator did well. I thought the questions were good. And I think if you can't tell the difference between these two candidates and these two parties after that debate last night, you're blind.
Well, I'll agree with Joe to a point. I mean, I do think it was a good debate. It was well worth watching. It was one of those debates where you felt like you didn't want to see it end. You wanted to see it go for another half hour or an hour because I think there was a lot of good stuff on the substance happening. You know, the problem is a lot of times the takeaway for debates, if you look at this over the years, is one of appearance and performance. You know, I remember, you know, Al Gore's sighing performance in 2000. That tends to be the takeaway for a lot of people. So as much as we would agree on this program that substance is important, a lot of times it's style as well. And I really don't think Joe Biden pulled it off last night.
Well, and I guess what I get a kick out of is it's also the very people that are critical of the Democrats and this stuff were criticizing President Obama for being too passive. Then Vice President Biden is aggressive. I think he kept Paul Ryan a little shaken up during the whole darn debate, and I think that was the intent. But, you know, Governor Romney had quite a few of the same attributes that Chris and others are accusing Vice President Biden of in the first debate, where he was the one who was interrupting and going after and being aggressive. So what's the difference? It's a debate style. What the big issue is, did people get an idea of who these people are, what these candidates stand for, and whose side are they on?
Well, let me ask you, what was the most significant exchange, Joe, or myth bust that Joe Biden did?
Oh, I think the most important thing related to Medicare. And, you know, it doesn't matter how many different ways Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan want to shade the truth on this, but their proposal is for a voucher system for Medicare. And if, you know, people need to know if that's what they are going to propose. The other thing is Paul Ryan was not able to answer once where they're going to find the money for this $5 trillion tax cut. The short answer is, and Joe Biden hit it out of the park on this, means you got to go after mortgage interest, charitable contributions, you got to go after college loans, you've got to go after all these different things to get to that kind of money. And the rope-a-dope strategy of Governor Romney and Paul Ryan is, we're going to tell everybody we're going to cut your taxes, but we're not going to say how.
Well, you can respond to that, Chris, and then I also want to know what you think Paul Ryan did that might have exposed shortcomings of the Obama administration.
Yeah, I mean, I think first of all, on the economy, I think Paul Ryan made some strong points, in particular calling out Biden and the Obama administration for this class warfare technique of saying we've got to, you know, go after the richest in our country because, you know, they're the ones who can help us pay the bills, when we all know that that's not true, that it is impossible to tax those folks at the top, so to speak, enough to pay for the hole that we've dug us in. I mean, I think when you review what was said last night, you know, under Biden's logic, big spending under President Bush created the recession, but now bigger spending under President Obama is going to fix it. You know, he hit Ryan for supporting Iraq and Afghanistan. Biden also voted for those. I mean, I think that, and Joe's, you know, making this clear this morning, the base Democrats probably love the performance, but I think the independents, they're losing on that. I think Ryan's answer on faith and abortion was a very powerful answer, a very strong personalized answer. And I don't think Biden was able to hold his own on that. You know, but again, I don't think on substance, I mean, I think each side heard what they wanted to hear from the candidates last night. And I didn't see any huge gaffes on either side, I don't think. But I think, again, if you boil it down to, okay, it was a draw on the issues, now we look at style over substance, then I think Paul Ryan was the clear winner. He gave off a very steady performance, very strong. He was unflappable, unflustered, and I thought he looked great on the national stage last night.
Joe?
Looks smirky to me.
Well, let's take a listen. Speaking of...
see, it's the difference between Dems and Republicans. We
Joe,
see
Joe's
one thing, they see the other.
Now. That's
no,
what's going on here.
No, you always do a good job on these shows.
You know, I only saw one poll this morning when I was going through some of the post-debate coverage. It was a CBS poll of the undecided voters, and in that one poll, it did show that the undecided voters that CBS gathered gave Biden the win for the debate. Chris, have you seen anything else?
You know, I was just sort of trolling around this morning and saw one. I want to say it was CNN, but don't hold me to that. But it didn't indicate a clear win for either side.
That was CNN.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was CNN. So I think that, you know, again, I think Joe was right. Folks were speaking to their bases last night, and I think their bases both liked what they heard. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think we know from past experience that, you know, vice presidential debates don't really tend to sway too many people one way or the other. Their impact is probably minimal. But I think in terms of learning where both of these campaigns are at, I think it was a very informative debate, so I think it was valuable in that regard.
I agree.
Let me play one clip from the debate last night. Speaking of gaffes, this was, I believe, when Joe Biden was taking Romney to task for the 47% remark.
Romney's a good man. He cares about 100% of Americans in this country. And with respect to that quote, I think the vice president very well knows that sometimes the words don't come out of your mouth the right way.
But I always say what I mean.
So, Joe, too much made of that 47% remark?
No, I think that Barack Obama should hammer that home for the next 25 days, because it's Romney in his own words. It's very difficult for a candidate to backtrack something when it's their voice. And, you know, the gaffe machine thing, Biden didn't make any real gaffes last night, although he had one great zinger. It reminded me of Lloyd Benston on the Jack Kennedy line. And, you know, I mean, first of all, Republicans keep saying Jack Kennedy cut income taxes. No, he didn't. Lyndon Johnson did after Kennedy was assassinated. So get it right, folks.
Let me ask Chris to respond to this exchange between Biden and Ryan over the stimulus package.
He sent me two letters saying, by the way, can you send me some stimulus money for companies here in the state of Wisconsin? We sent millions of dollars. You know why he said
you did ask for stimulus money.
Sure, he
correct?
Did. By the way,
on
he,
two
he
occasions,
took
it. We advocated for constituents who are applying for grants. That's what we do. We do that for all constituents who are applying.
Oh, I love
for grants.
That.
What about that, Chris?
Well, you know, that was the part where I went a little bit, you know, I said, okay, Joe Biden scored a point there. I think that you can have a whole separate debate on this idea of, you know, once the stimulus is passed, is it then acceptable for a congressman to advocate on behalf of his constituents, which clearly Paul Ryan was doing in this case. You know, he may have been against it, but now that it's in place, why would you not help constituents who want to take advantage of it? I mean, I think in that sense, it's just Paul Ryan doing his job as a congressman. But, you know, I, last night in the moment when I saw it, I kind of cringed a little and went, oh, you know, that's a good hit. I mean, because that does tend to resonate. It's the idea of this hypocrisy of, well, I don't support it. It's awful. It's terrible. But I'll help my constituents get it. But, you know, I think when you analyze it a little bit, I think you would come to the conclusion that, look, Paul Ryan was doing his job on behalf of a couple of constituents, whether he likes the stimulus or not. He was trying to help his, you know, the folks he represents in his district.
How does that compare to Scott Walker, then? Scott Walker, who turned his back on $900 million in high-speed rail money, Scott Walker, who turned his back on the money for broadband in rural Wisconsin. If you're just doing it for your constituents, which one's right? Is it Paul Ryan or is it Scott Walker?
We're going to have to leave that hypothetical for the moment because this is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Joe Winicky and Chris Lotto. And we will take your calls on what you thought of the vice presidential debate coming up in just a few minutes. Plus, we'll also review other top stories of the news of the week. But it's time to remind you that this is the fall membership drive here at Wisconsin Public Radio, the last weekday of the fall membership drive, the last week in review of this fall membership drive, and we need your pledge. Cheryl Gasser is with me asking you to go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 right now with a gift in support of the programs you count on.
Good morning, Joy. Our goal last hour was 40 pledges, and I am thrilled to say we heard from 50 members.
Yay.
To Wisconsin Public Radio. So that's wonderful, but a new goal, a new hour, a new goal. And this hour, we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $1,500.
Oh.
From a very generous current member. It's her way of encouraging you to join her in your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. So get your pledge doubled right now during the Week in Review on this final weekday of the drive.
Ooh, double your pledge, double your fun, double your impact. Any pledge, any amount is doubled with this challenge grant going on. So what a great time if you've been procrastinating to get that pledge in now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Help us end the pledge drive for the Joy Cardine Show during the Week in Review, one of your favorite programs, one of the programs you catch every single week because you love to hear from our two guests from different perspectives each week, talk about all the important news stories. So make that pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It takes just a few minutes of your time to make that pledge. You give us your name, your contact information, how you want to give, and how you'd like to pay. No matter how you choose to give, though, or how much, it takes just 2 minutes of your time. So take those 2 minutes right now on this final weekday of the drive and pledge your support. Get your pledge doubled. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, with this dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now, your gift of $50 turns into $100, your $100 pledge turns into $200, and so on. So get your pledge matched right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And double the impact of your pledge and help pay for the programs you count on.
Wisconsin Public Radio, we work on the honor system. You don't have to make a contribution, but think what you would pay if you had to. And maybe it's $5 a month, maybe it's $10 a month, maybe a dollar a day. You get to decide the amount and then make that pledge at WPR.org. 888-202-2552.
If you've never given to Wisconsin Public Radio before because you don't think that you can make a difference, think again. Listener donations make up nearly 40% of our budget. It doesn't mean that we're asking you for a huge gift.
Many first-time donors give $5 a month for their WPR listening. You get to decide the amount that works for you, and please know that it really does make a difference. So don't put it off any longer. Give now at WPR.org.
And that dollar-for-dollar match is still in effect, so give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It is the last weekday of our fall membership drive. Today is the last day for you to show your support of this program for the Week in Review. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Cheryl, thanks very much. We'll get an update from you later. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking today with Chris Lotto, who is former communications director of the Republican Party, and Joe Winicky, who is the former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. We're reviewing the news of the week, including last night's vice presidential debate, and we have lots of callers who want to have something to say about that. Mark in La Crosse joins us first. Hello, Mark.
Hi. I was just calling because I kind of felt at the beginning of the debate when Vice President Biden was asked on the Libya matter that he lost a lot of credibility. His answer, I mean, does he really believe that the American public would believe that they'd go on for days and not know what happened there in Libya and expect us all to believe it? His constant interrupting and not allowing everybody to listen to each candidate give its points, I think is going to be a real disservice to everyone, including the independents that are going to try and make up their mind.
All right, Joe, briefly on the interrupting, since we've talked about that before, but on the content.
I'll take passion over passive any day of the week. Maybe it's because I'm a type A personality, but you know, the fact that Joe Biden is showing passion and showing a complete disregard for the policies of the Romney Ryan ticket is something that I was impressed by. And usually when people are complaining about tactics, it means they're not sure they won on anything else.
Well, let's talk a little bit, though, about the terrorist attack and the fact that this week the State Department confirmed there were no protests before that Benghazi attack, that it was a terrorist attack.
Well, I think that's true. And we've learned now, thanks to a botched congressional hearing, I think, from Representative Issa, that secrets which should have been classified were brought out into the open at a hearing, that there may have actually been a clandestine CAA operative little small base at that very spot. So there's more that will come out on this. It's a tragedy. And I think it's really besmirching the good name of Ambassador Stevens and others to try and think that there was some nefarious plot here by the president or someone. It's just a sad thing that happened, and we will get to the bottom of it.
Mm-hmm. Chris?
Well, first of all, I mean, the caller was, you know, right on about the performance last night, so referring back to that. And on Libya, I think that the administration, and this came through in Joe Biden's answer to the question last night, is on pretty weak ground. You know, you referred to the hearing, the House hearing this week, which, you know, beyond the obvious tendency toward political theater and events like this, which you're going to see, especially a few weeks out, you know, from the election. You know, there are a lot of questions that remain about this attack, and it is now officially a terrorist attack. Apparently, the administration was among the last folks to figure that out. But when it comes to foreign policy, you know, President Obama really has until now probably had, you know, something of an advantage. And I mean, and obviously the main reason why I say that is because, you know, the administration killed Osama bin Laden. So that's definitely a feather in his cap. You know, and I think that in contrast, Mitt Romney, his foreign policy credentials are a bit light. But, you know, the administration has really mishandled this whole matter, particularly the messaging after the attack, you know, led us all astray for a long time about what really happened there. You know, there are lingering questions about security on site and whether there was enough to handle a potential attack, you know, on the anniversary of the Twin Towers attacks, no less. I think it raises legitimate questions about foreign policy management and handling by the Obama administration. We know there were concerns about security in Libya. There was an awareness that an attack could happen around, again, the anniversary of the September 11th attacks. We know the ambassador who was killed, Chris Stevens, asked for additional security but didn't get it. So when you put all these points together, I think you have a big negative mark on Obama's foreign policy record, and I think that was exposed last night.
The hypocrisy of this from Paul Ryan is nothing short of amazing. It was his House Budget Committee that cut $300 million in security money to protect places like these embassies, and then they have the audacity to blame the President of the United States over a tragedy where four people were murdered. Obviously, they didn't have enough security, or they would have been able to defend themselves. So it was a tragedy, and trying to make hay on a tragedy is something that's beneath a race for president.
Let me bring in a caller. Dave in Wanakee is with us. Hello, Dave.
Yes, hello. I really enjoyed the debate last night. I was glad to see they aired out differences over Afghanistan. I am very pleased that Joe Biden said that basically we are out of Afghanistan by 2014. It's up to the Afghans. I noticed that Paul Ryan said, well, maybe we would be out, you know. But at the same time, he also said that he would have preferred having U.S. troops fighting, you know, the Taliban.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much. Well, how about Afghanistan? Chris Lotto, you want to start on that one?
Well, I mentioned earlier when we were discussing the debate about the hypocrisy of Joe Biden going after Paul Ryan on the same things that Joe Biden supported. I think the caller, I think Paul Ryan, if you were listening, Paul Ryan spelled out very clearly what his position was on all of this, that the idea that we give them a definite timeline and say we're going to be out by this date certain, really emboldens the enemy. They just sit and say, well, great, we'll bide our time until the U.S. gets out totally. And I think Paul Ryan was reluctant to do that with good reason. If you believe candidate Barack Obama, we should have been out of there by now, but we're not, because the situation is more complex than just yanking everybody out and going home. And I think that Paul Ryan gave a nuanced answer about this last night. The fact is the administration has not set an absolute date certain that they're going to pull everybody out either.
That's revisionist history. Barack Obama said he would get out of Iraq, and he did. He said he would commit to a surge and complement the surge of President Bush in Afghanistan because that's where bin Laden was, not Iraq. And now we're out of Iraq. We have made a date certain that we're going to get out of Afghanistan. If Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan want to run as being maybe staying in Afghanistan, I hope they do television ads on it and everything else, because about 80% of the people in this country are sick of this war.
Let's move on to some other news of the week. We didn't hear anything, I don't think, about Big Bird last night, unlike last week's debate. And this week, the Obama campaign came out with an ad featuring Big Bird to criticize Mitt Romney. The producers of Sesame Street said they wanted the ad pulled because they don't want to appear like they're taking a side. Well, Joe, what do you make of this Big Bird flap?
Yeah, it is what it is, and that means that this shows where your priorities are. Wall Street, Sesame Street, public access versus the rich and the powerful. I think that the president should continue it to a point. I think the 47% issue makes the same case in a much stronger way, and we can let Big Bird pretty soon go back to public television. But it was Mitt Romney who started this. It was Mitt Romney who said he wants to defund the public airwaves, which I assume includes
airwaves. We would lose money that comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, right, if it's
defunded. I don't want that to happen to you, Joy.
Thank you very much, Joe. But Chris, what do you make of the whole Big Bird flap from this past week?
Well, Joy, I don't want it to happen to you either.
Thank you.
That said, but let me continue. Look, it's a silly attack. I think it's going to lay an egg.
Thank you.
I worked on that all afternoon. the conservatives are having a field day with this. I think some Democrats are even reacting poorly to it. I was just reading an article in the Chicago Tribune yesterday. Some Democrats were already worried about President Obama, and then they see this attack, and it's doing nothing to soothe those concerns. I think it's too lightweight. I think it's, no offense, Joy, a little bit frivolous when we have some bigger fish to fry right now. I think the Romney campaign hit it on the head this week. They pointed out that President Obama, using his own words, said 4 years ago, if you don't have a record to run on, you make a big election about small things. And I think they are trying to make something out of a small thing.
The values of a candidate, Chris, are not small things. And I think this crystallizes value issues between President Obama and Governor Romney. I mean, it is. I mean, we're using their own words. Once again, this was Mitt Romney who brought up Big Bird. It wasn't Barack Obama.
Well, let me ask you, Joe, you said when we first started that the Mittmentum or whatever you called it was a media creation. Isn't Mitt Romney, though, gaining in the polls?
He's gained in some states. And plus, national polling is not at all relevant to electoral college polling. I mean, anybody who knows what's going on here knows that Ohio means everything. If Barack Obama continues to hold the lead in Virginia and wins Ohio, this election's already over.
Well, momentum is shifting at just the right time in Romney's favor, and that's why you're seeing a lot of nervousness from Joe and the rest. Now, I'm not nervous at all.
I think Obama's going to win big.
I'm trying to make it sound like you're nervous, Joe. I always knew that it was going to be an uphill climb for Mitt Romney. I think if you look at the aggregate of current national polls, I think Romney is up by like a point, which is obviously statistically insignificant right now. But I think that you're seeing momentum come at the right time, which is late in the race, and it's shifting in Romney's favor. Again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Romney has it in the bag. I don't think so. I mean, I still think Barack Obama, as much as it pains me to say it, is still the prohibitive favorite. But I think after last week's debate performance, after last night's debate performance, you're starting to see this thing shift where certainly the national media, I agree, they want a horse race, but they are also recognizing that the Romney campaign isn't dead in the water, as folks would have you believe even 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, there's another debate. Is it next Tuesday night?
Yes.
Presidential.
Yes.
What are you hoping for, Joe? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of viewership in this debate. I suspect there was quite a few viewers last night, too, because it got trumped up in that regard, and I think people who watched it liked it. So I think you're going to see a more similar debate to last night. But, you know, part of this is, no, and all due deference to Jim Lehrer, at one time he was one of my heroes on this, but he did not control that first debate, and it became drawn out, and frankly, I was bored. This debate last night, I wasn't bored at all. I think you're going to see something closer to last night. But a lot of it's going to depend. I believe the next debate, and Chris maybe could correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is one of those town hall type things. And those things, all bets are off. It's a very different venue and how those things work and how you come across. And that debate, in that format, by the way, things like Chris keeps bringing up about, you know, your gestures and your mannerisms can have a bigger play because you can see how the audience reacts to it.
Mm-hmm. Chris, next week?
Yeah, I think the next one is a town hall format. I think you guys are right. And I think the last one, I think, is international issues or foreign policy or something like that. The town hall debate will probably expose. I don't know that you're going to see aggressiveness in particular from either candidate. Maybe you will. It's impossible to predict right now. But again, you have to be conscious of that audience in the room that you're interacting with as well. So the idea that you're going to put on a Biden performance like Joe did last night, that definitely wouldn't fly in a town hall setting. So I think that the challenge for Obama is obviously to bounce back from last week's lackluster performance, and Democrats as well as Republicans agree that it was not a good show last week. He's going to have to bounce back from that. Show real strength, I think show real warmth, and I think in particular on some of the economic issues, the domestic issues that people care most of all about, both candidates are going to have to try and make some points that I don't think either side has made up till now.
Just one very quick point. Just remember, for all those Republicans who think that they've got all the momentum, ask them, how did George Bush the second, and how did Ronald Reagan do in 1984 and George Bush did in 2004 in those first debates? They got clobbered. Did it matter? No.
Let's think about that as we take a short pause. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Joe Winicky, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, and Chris Lotto. He is a former communications director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin. We're going to talk about other news of the week, including some of the top stories in state politics coming up in just a bit. But it's time for the Week in Review quiz right now. Since the presidential debate, the sales of one Halloween costume have risen 500% this week. The costume features a short yellow ruffled dress with orange knee-highs and pink accents. The look is completed with a themed bird headband. What is the costume? And I think we're going to want you to be pretty specific on what is this costume. 1-800-642-1234 is the number if you would like to guess. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk at WPR.org. And here's the deal. We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and you will be eligible to win one of the books we've featured on this program in the recent past. So good luck. We will reveal the answer and the winner at the end of the Week in Review. Time now to welcome in Cheryl Gasser with an update on our fall membership drive, or Cheryl, I should say the last day, the last hour of the fall membership drive for the Joy Cardine Show.
The last chance to pledge your support for the Week in Review and the Joy Cardine Show during this drive. I'm thrilled to let you know, Joy, that we had a challenge grant, dollar for dollar match during this hour, and we have met that grant. So thank you so much. But we have a goal still this hour, 45 pledges this hour in support of the Week in Review. We've heard from 20 members so far. Thank you. But if you've been meaning to pledge and you know you have and you love the Week in Review and you know you do, make your pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm so happy to be able to do this program every day, and I especially enjoy the Week in Review. We get such good guests on Wisconsin Public Radio. We are honored to have our weekly regulars during the Week in Review, like Joe Winicky and Chris Lotto today. And we get these good guests because they know you are great listeners, that you will ask great questions, and that they aren't going to be interrupted by commercials, except when we have a membership drive every once in a while. Your support makes this possible. You are the most reliable part of our budget. Thanks in advance for making your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We heard this hour from David in Barneveld, who pledged for the stability and sanity that WPR provides. Well, David, thank you for your support. And also this hour, Joy, from Annie in Milwaukee, who increased her sustaining monthly gift and wants to encourage other sustainers to consider doing the same thing. Thank you, Annie, for your support. Thanks for being a sustaining member of Wisconsin Public Radio and supporting the Week in Review. You can do the same thing. Do it now at WPR.org.
Now, you decide how much to pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. We have such a wide array of levels here. You can do $5 a month. You can do $10 a month or $20 a month. Some people pledge $100 a month. I mean, it really is completely up to you what you want to give. But give it because you know that this is listener-supported radio, and we would not be Wisconsin Public Radio without you. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, this Week in Review segment is really one of the highlights of my week. And if you feel the same way, if you enjoy these thoughtful discussions, these passionate perspectives from guests like Joe Winicky and Chris Lotto and Kathleen Falk and Christine Bremer-Moogley, Margaret Farrow, the list goes on and on. Great political thinkers, people who care about ideas as much as you do. We're asking for your support. Do it now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. We'll hear back from you at the end of the hour. I hope we can make this goal on this last day of our fall membership drive, at least for the Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking about the top news stories of the week with Joe Winicky and with Chris Lotto. We've talked about the vice presidential debate, the race for president, and other top national and international issues. Let's talk some about what's going on in the state of Wisconsin. For example, the Senate race, the U.S. Senate race between Tammy Baldwin and Tommy Thompson. Another poll came out. This latest one shows Tammy Baldwin with 48% of the vote and Tommy Thompson with 46% of the vote. So what do you make of this, Joe Winicky? That lead used to be bigger for Tammy Baldwin.
And it used to be smaller.
Yeah.
That's what happens in elections. By the way, without giving it away, I'm quite sure I know the answer to the quiz.
We will, by the way.
No, you Lady Gaga.
Oh, close, 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 close. But you know what? I do want you guys to think about. I'm going to ask you what your costume is at the end of the hour.
God.
Anyway, what about Tammy Baldwin and Tommy Thompson? It's a close race, anyway.
Yeah, you know, the conventional wisdom all along was that this was Tommy Thompson's to lose because he'd never lost an election in the state, and he was a four-term governor and was popular everywhere. But Tommy, I mean, first of all, I think Tammy Baldwin owned the airwaves for better part of a month and really hit hard on the mythology or mystique of Tommy Thompson. And it worked. And all of a sudden it went from a 9-point Thompson lead to a 9-point or 10-point Baldwin lead. Now it's naturally coming a little closer. And I expect this to be a pretty close race. I do think Tammy Baldwin has the upper hand. And for one reason, and I've been surprised by this, and I'm not one who bashes Tommy Thompson. I've always kind of liked the guy, is he doesn't seem to stand for anything. Nobody knows why he's running. And you've got to, that's how Ted Kennedy lost in 1980. He couldn't explain to Roger Mudd why he was running for president. Tommy Thompson can't explain why he's running for Senate.
What do you think of that, Chris?
Well, I think if you look at the average of all the recent polls that have been done in the Senate race, Tammy Baldwin enjoys overall a slight lead, although, again, statistically insignificant. I think it averages out at something like 3 points. So it's a close race. Joe is absolutely right. It's tightening at this point, as I think a lot of folks expected it would. You know, and I'll be honest here, I can't base this on anything other than my gut right now, but my gut tells me that Tommy Thompson is going to pull this out because he does have a record of winning elections in the state. I think he's a known commodity by people throughout Wisconsin. He's well-liked. He's liked even by some conservative Democrats. I mean, you just heard Joe kind of, you know, show a little respect for Tommy. Independents alike tend to like Tommy Thompson. I think Tammy Baldwin and her agenda, her voting record in Congress, are simply too far left and too liberal for the state of Wisconsin. And I think that come Election Day, people are going to realize that Tommy, you know, is the better choice. Now, again, Tammy Baldwin enjoys the slightest of leads right now, but I think come Election Day, that's going to evaporate and go the other
way.
Well,
and Joy, this is personal with me. The last time Tommy ran in Wisconsin was 1998. I was a guy who tried to make a comeback who last ran in 1998 in the last year. It doesn't always work. They don't all remember you.
We are going to be talking with the candidates for U.S. Senate. At least we've reached out to all of them. Tammy Baldwin and Tommy Thompson have yet to answer our request. We do have two of the candidates running for U.S. Senate who are scheduled for our series of candidate forums next week, Tuesday from 7 until 7:30. We will talk with independent candidate, and I'm not making this up, Nimrod Allen. And then the Libertarian candidate, Joseph Kexel, is scheduled for Thursday from 7 until 7:30. And we still have room for Tammy Baldwin and Tommy Thompson if they would like to join us for these candidate forums, half-hour candidate forums with all of the U.S. Senate candidates.
I got to tune in to somebody named Nimrod.
Now, there is a U.S. Senate candidate debate between, I believe it is just Tammy Baldwin and Tommy Thompson. That will be next Thursday night, and we will air that on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, let's move on to some other stories in the news. We did have the former aide to Governor Walker, when he was running for governor, agree to a plea deal this week. She pled guilty to one count of doing campaign work on the taxpayer's dime. Let me ask you, Chris Lotto, first, how important, how significant you think this story is?
Sure. Well, I mean, Kelly Reinfleisch pleaded guilty yesterday to the felony misconduct in office, as you were discussing. Now, you know, the key here is that after the hearing yesterday, the assistant DA, the prosecutor, Bruce Landgraf, said, and I quote here, "This case was never about Governor Scott Walker. It was always about Kelly Reinfleisch." Now, as much as that drives Democrats nuts, it's the truth. I mean, you can criticize the way this case has been managed with some of the leaks and everything else that's been going on. You know, the fact is there's still nothing that points to any wrongdoing by Governor Walker. We still don't have that. We're still not seeing it so many months after all this started. You know, and Democrats aren't going to get their early Christmas wish, obviously, of seeing the governor on the stand. You know, Kelly Reinfleisch, you know, conducted misconduct in office. She has now admitted it in an open court, and we'll see what the punishment is.
Mm-hmm. Joe?
Well, what Bruce Landgraf said was the case against Kelly Reinfleisch was not about Scott Walker. Big deal. I mean, at some point, I mean, either the governor is stupid, and I don't think he is, or he had to know some of this. This stuff was going on 20 feet from his office. And this isn't just about Kelly Reinfleisch, who, by the way, was also involved in the caucus scandal. But it's also, we've got two convictions already coming out of this office. We've got two other individuals, including his former deputy chief of staff, that are about to go on trial. How long do you have to look at this and say, hey, the rot starts coming from the head?
I think the idea that you can say, well, you have these other people getting nailed for stuff, things like embezzlement and things like that, and to say that Scott Walker has to be guilty because he was in the same office with them is a slippery slope to be going down.
Four
Joe,
people?
You know that as well. If
four
they had
people?
Something against them, then for crying out loud, after what's it been, 2 years, 2.5 years? Let's see something then.
I agree. Something. I don't understand why this takes forever, but it does. And when it does come out, it can come fast, I'm sure, because I know you were around, Chris, when the caucus scandal came out. It just broke like overnight.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I think, you know, and the caucus scandal was obviously something that, you know, both sides got tagged on, unfortunately.
Yes. They were both guilty.
I think the idea that you can condemn and prosecute Scott Walker when he hasn't been charged with anything.
That's fair.
And they certainly have the information and the resources at their disposal to go after him. You know, I don't think it's fair at this point to be going after him.
I think it's not fair to implicate him at this point, but I think anybody, any reasonable person would say either that or he's a lousy hirer.
Let me ask you both in our final minutes here a couple of other state stories. Republican State Representative Roger Rivard of Rice Lake is being criticized for comments he made to a Chautauqua newspaper. He said his father told him when he was 17 that some girls rape easy as a way to warn him that a woman could agree to sex, but then later claimed that it was not consensual. This wound up costing him Paul Ryan's endorsement, and now he finds himself in more hot water. We just heard a state news story that said, I think Robin Voss was not endorsing him as well. Chris Lotto, your thoughts of your reaction to this story? Rivard says the remark was taken out of context. But does he deserve the distancing that he's getting?
Yeah, that taken out of context thing isn't going to fly on this one. It looks bad on its face and in the body of the story. So it was a profoundly dumb and offensive thing to say, and I think you're seeing the fallout because it was pretty swift in most Republican circles where folks are washing their hands of this guy. And it was a dopey thing to say, and he's paying the price. I mean, Republicans are streaming away from this guy in droves.
Mm-hmm. Joe?
You know, the cover-up is usually as bad as the crime, and his attempt at fixing this just made it worse. I think Stephen Smith is coming to Madison. Mr. Smith is coming to Madison.
Let me ask you, Joe, in this particular, there was a forum this week as well talking about which assembly seats in Wisconsin could change parties or were in the mix for control of the state legislature. Is this one of them?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, this was a seat that was held by Pat Smith, and it was held by Mary Hubler. It was a Democratic seat for 40 years. This is one of those ones that in a wave year got away from the Dems. It is a 50-50 seat, though. It's not overwhelmingly Dem or overwhelmingly Republican. By the way, why does Joe Hendrick, who helped create this legislative map, be the one who becomes the expert on which seats Democrats could hold or not? That's like asking me to say which Republicans are good.
Well, we might have more on this on the State Capitol Report with Sean Johnson, but any quick remarks about the control of the legislature and Chris Lotto?
Well, Joe's right about that seat, obviously. I mean, at 50-50, you're in play, and when you have the Republican candidate saying something so incredibly offensive, that's very easy to tip in the Democrats' favor. I think the story at the top of the hour, I think, portrayed even Democrats, you know, are saying that, look, it's going to be the Republicans at the end of the day that hold on to control of the assembly. And I think that's the way it's going to go.
All right. Well,
that's
probably
true, but it's going to be in a much closer number.
It's time to say congratulations to Lynn in Milton, who is our Week in Review quiz winner. She says that she already has her sassy Big Bird costume. That is what that is the costume that has risen in sales by 500%, according to Costume Craze. You know, they also have a sassy Elmo and a sassy Cookie Monster costume, if you're interested, Joe.
Well, I thought I'd go as a combination between Snuffleupagus, I always wanted to be an elephant, and Lady Gaga, you know, with some of her accents.
Hey, you could do that now that you lost 25 pounds or so.
Yeah,
congratulations.
I'm looking, yeah, strong like bull.
All right, Chris Lotto, what are you going to be for Halloween?
You know, I'm the laziest costume guy in the world. I typically dig out my blaze orange and dress as a hunter every year.
Typical Republican.
I just grab some old clothes, pour it on my head, and I'm a zombie, you know, one way or the other.
Very good, very good. Well, have a great weekend. Thanks very much to Chris Lotto and Joe Winicky for being with us.
Thank you both.
Bye-bye. It's time now to ask you to go to the phones and call us at 888-202-2552 or go to WPR.org and make your pledge to support the Week in Review, to support the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, and Cheryl Gasser joins me. And Cheryl, how are we doing?
We are doing very well, looking for 45 pledges this hour in support of the Week in Review, just 17 to go, but just 5 minutes to hear from you now. So if you haven't pledged, if you've been waiting for the last minute, the last weekday of the drive, this is your last chance to pledge your support for the Joy Cardine Show. So do it now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Decide how much Wisconsin Public Radio is worth to you, how much you can afford, and then make that pledge. Consider a monthly pledge. Consider becoming a sustaining member of Wisconsin Public Radio, where your support is ongoing month after month. You can have it withdrawn from your credit card or your bank account. You never have to worry about renewing, and it is a sustainable, reliable source of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio. Whatever you decide, do make the pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When it comes to the Ideas Network, the expression talk is cheap just does not hold true. First of all, on the Ideas Network, you get high quality conversations. And second, these conversations are not free. It does take a lot of resources to get all these discussions on the air. And that is where you come in. You enjoy this high quality conversation and support it by making a contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Do it because the Week in Review is a regular part of your week. Maybe you also enjoy the State Capitol Report, which you hear Mondays at 7, or the Big Question Debate that you hear Wednesdays at 7. We try to cover the most important issues in state and national and international politics and give you a voice in the conversation as well. So do make a pledge of any amount to help support these conversations week after week, day after day. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you're already a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, but you love the Week in Review. You love the political and election coverage that Joy brings to you. Make an additional pledge in any amount to show your support. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And, you know, Cheryl, we are going to be taking the show on the road next week. We're going to Milwaukee, and we hope to see as many of you as possible coming to the Pabst Theater. It's the Cudahy Pub at the Pabst Theater. And it's going to be the day after the presidential debate, so we'll be talking about the presidential debate. We'll be talking about media coverage of the campaigns. We're going to have a lot of fun, and this kind of programming is what your pledge helps pay for, too. So please make that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio, it's a great source for information about the nation, the world, and, of course, about Wisconsin. We know that you value WPR for the lifelong learning that it brings to you. You learn something new every day on Joy's show, probably every single hour. That is worth a pledge of support. So help us reach this goal this hour. 45 pledges, the final hour of the Joy Cardine Show during this fall membership drive. So please contribute now at WPR.org.
I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. If you're already a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, maybe you're a sustainer or you renew through the mail, thank you if you've already made your pledge or renewed during this pledge drive. We really couldn't do it without you, and it's been a fantastic drive, and thank you so much for your support. But right now, few more seconds for you to make that pledge. If you've been thinking about doing it or upping that pledge and you haven't gotten around to it yet, please do it right now. Help us go out with a bang during this last hour of the Joy Cardine Show during the fall membership drive. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks very much to Cheryl Gasser and to my producers, Bill Martins and Amanda Magnus and Rob Ferret and Cynthia Schuster. And thank you, too. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.